football fans, and welcome to the CBFA podcast with your hosts, James Parks and Cole Fortner.
So in that regard, hello and welcome to the CBFA podcast. Alongside me, as always, my co-host James, and today joining us for the first time in a hot minute, Kevin Kratz, who also does some announcing.
Right on.
I don't remember what episode we're on, but we're recapping season 8 of our season. We managed to get through our second week of the Calgary Cancer Society Breast Cancer Awareness Games. And the Pink Sock Initiative, which we have talked about several times before. And why don't we recap the game, starting with the Bulldogs and Colts first thing in the morning with you, Kevin.
So it was a fairly decent game. I mean, it was closer in levels of play than what the score might suggest, but Colts had a really hot start. Svetek Sereda had a touchdown early. Unfortunately, they weren't able to get the convert. So after one quarter, it was 6-0 Colts, but the Bulldogs had an offensive explosion, to say the least, in the second quarter. They led at halftime 22-6, and the Bulldogs just kept going in the second half, adding another two touchdowns and a field goal for a final score 41-6. The player of the game for the Colts was, I believe he's an offensive lineman. I don't have that information with me, but it was Denzel Takia-Mensah. Despite only the one touchdown, the Colts had some promising drives, and the offensive line contributed to that. Player of the game for the Bulldogs was Ethan Foss, who was the kicker. And he converted on all four touchdowns and three field goals, which, I mean, I don't recall there being a lot of field goals in general at this level of football. So to see three in a game and all of them being made is really quite incredible. So, it was a big win for the Bulldogs, who hadn't won since week 3. So, I mean, and since they're only 1 point behind the Cowboys for fourth in the standings, you know, anything to try and close out on a high note. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think from that game is like, yeah, like you mentioned, like the Colts had that strong start. It was like, what, like a 90-yard rushing touchdown? And then the Bulldogs answered with their own in, what was it, the third quarter with one that was 108 yards.
Yeah, there was a really long one in that game.
That was the quarterback too, wasn't it? I believe.
I believe so. Yeah, I think he got a lot of their touchdowns.
Well, I saw that last year with the Bulldogs too, with Sam Willie. He wasn't initially supposed to be their quarterback. He was supposed to be their running back, but their quarterback went down during the preseason, and they had to readjust their entire offense. And you know, they made it work. Obviously, you know, they're able to keep that mobile quarterback option again, and utilize that for their offense. And yeah, they managed to, yeah, they had a really good game, and it's back into the win column for the first time in what, 4 or 5 weeks now.
Yeah. I mean, cause they were 3-0 to start, and then they got a tie last week. So, I mean, they ended their losing streak at the very least last week, but be able to actually get a win was big. But I mean, the Colts still, they had some good drives. Like they got they had a first and goal and just barely were short on a third down with the end zone. So, I mean, they definitely, it wasn't like an absolute tilted field. So,
no, the Colts definitely looked better than they did last week in Airdrie, but it's, you know, I don't want to criticize them much, but they are definitely one of the teams that are a lot lower down in our standings list, and it shows.
I mean, I'm surprised that they've struggled considering they were runners-up in Div 1 last year. I mean, it's the same with the Stampeders as well. So,
yeah, a lot of their
senior players moved up, moved on, and it's tough to replace that kind of experience and talent. The talent is probably easier to replace. The experience, not so much.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's a good way to look at it. Our second game of the day was the Rebels taking on the Eagles. Kevin, I know you were in the time booth for that one, so I don't know if you're able to elaborate much on that one as well.
What was the final? That was
It was all Eagles.
49-0 for the Eagles.
But I mean, still the Rebels had moments. I mean, honestly, like this is one of the more competitive seasons. And regarding the Rebels, I'll quote Dave Weber. He said that they might be one of the best 0-9 teams. And and would still be, have a good game in the Div 3 final.
I'm going to bug Davey because he's obviously been listening to the podcast and not telling us about
Obviously, yeah, because it's not like we've mentioned that like every single week.
it. That just proves that I haven't listened to the podcast. I only listen to Davey, so because he
Well,
and I
you'll listen
win.
to this episode.
Yeah, no, from what I remember from this game, the Eagles got out early and stayed ahead. It wasn't really the greatest showing that we've seen from the Rebels throughout the season. And yeah, again, it was like 2 weeks ago, the Eagles, the receivers could do nothing wrong again. And it's, they've got the offensive depth that they can go to all of their receivers, they're running back on every single play, and players are going to step up and make plays when they need to. They're definitely a force to be reckoned with, and they have quite well earned themselves the second position that they are currently sitting in.
Yeah, and to be fair to the Rebels, I did overhear some of the parents chatting under the stands, and it's a tough spot for them to be in because you look at the record and you've got nothing to show for all that effort for that se for the whole season, but they will be they're so I mean it's tough to show up for two halves of a football game when the scoreboard is that lopsided, and they've got one more game to go here in the regular season. It's also going to be a tough one against the Cowboys, so it doesn't get any easier. Like we talked about before, Cole, they were close and competitive against some of the teams early in the season, but their schedule didn't do them any favors. They played tougher and tougher competition as the season went on. So, yeah, they've not been doing as well as we would have liked, and they're starting to probably get a little little disheartened about it, which is only natural, but they're going to be reminded very soon that they're going to be playing for a trophy. There's a championship that's on the line, and they have a chance to win it. So I think, yeah, we're probably going to see more of the same out of them this weekend. But when it comes to the playoffs, and we see who they're matched up against, they're gonna come out flying in that final game of the year. I think we'll see a different Rebels team, and they will be competitive.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's that's one thing that's to note about the Rebels compared to some teams who I'm not going to mention, is there are some teams in the league that when they get down by a big score, their players do what's been referred to as pulling the chute, where they pull themselves and don't want to go back into the games because their team is down by a big score. They're not having fun. Whereas the Rebels players are one of the few teams where they will still be playing, with their heart and everything, giving it their all every single play. And you see it in the stands as well, where their parents are still cheering them on. They have probably one of the best fans in the league, the fan bases in the league, especially considering where they're sitting in the standings and stuff. And it's really good to see and stuff with an organization where things are sitting and stuff. And it's, you know, so you can't really fault the Rebels, because they are giving their all, and it shows.
And I still expect to see, you know, improvement from that team. After a year like this, you know, there'll be something to for them to build on for next year.
Moving on from that, we had our 1 o'clock game, which was our breast cancer or Calgary Cancer Society game between the Stampeders and the Wildcats, where we provided a check to the Calgary or the Canadian Cancer Society for $6,600. We want to talk about that game.
Yeah,
I was also in the
sure.
timing booth for that one as well.
I was on the sideline for that one. It was like I was expecting the Stamps to get up a little more, and I think they probably ran into some issues early, and it might have, you know, put them behind and got them chasing the game when if they had been able to score early, they might have been able to play a different game. But as it was, the Wildcats played an excellent game offensively and defensively and on special teams. They were tilting the field when they weren't scoring. They were punting and earning field position that way. The Stampeders were at times able to move the ball, but then would shoot themselves in the foot either with an ill-timed penalty or turnover. They had a couple of, you know, unfortunate turnovers, which were, you know, not their fault. That was excellent defense stripping the ball, right? So the Wildcats ended up running away with this one in the end. It was fairly competitive for the first half, but in the end, the Wildcats win this one 40-0.
You know, I mean, one thing I've actually noticed with the Wildcats for the few games I've seen of them is they seem a bit, I don't want to say like undisciplined, but they seem to take more penalties than other teams. That's just an observation where they just take a few penalty like more penalties than others, so.
I don't know if they take more than other teams.
I don't know. Like I said, it feels like I've noticed that they've taken more, at least for the games I've watched. So,
Yeah,
I could be
unfortunately, that's
wrong.
also not really a stat we keep track of, so
Yeah, I
I
know, but
can't confirm or deny whether or not that's actually
yeah,
a true thing or not, but
I just it, it's been it feels like that's just my observation for the games I've seen of them.
fair. We
So.
need a stats person next year.
Oh,
Do like full in depth.
yeah. So
Oh,
if you're a
yeah.
state student and you're taking statistics, reach out to us. We could use a stats team.
That game was followed up by we had two games at 3:15. We'll start off with the Mavericks, who took on the Lions. And is there anything
Yeah.
like that game?
Yeah, Mavericks and Lions. That one was a good one. I was able to be in the announcer's booth for that one. This one was very well played defensive battle on both sides. Both teams were playing excellent defense. The Mavericks were able to eventually find the end zone on a couple of nifty plays. They made some really, really smart plays, down near the goal line, and both their touchdowns were on similar type plays. But they played well. They drove well down. They drove the ball down the field. Mavericks ended up winning this one 14-0. But like I said, it was a heck of a defensive battle, and it was our closest game of the week. Definitely the most competitive. But yeah, the Lions come up just a bit short there.
And then our final game of the day was over on a kind of field between the Raiders and the Cowboys. I'm not sure if either of you are able to talk about that one either.
So I w was obviously not paying attention to that one, but
How dare you?
from what I understand, it was a well played game, and the score doesn't really indicate how it was played. It was a closer game than the score indicates. The Raiders ended up winning 32-0, and it was, a steady type game. It wasn't like all at once. It wasn't like the Cowboys let the game get away from them. It was 16-0 at halftime, so it was pretty steady. But yeah, the Raiders obviously just that much better than everyone else this year, and they're able to defeat the Cowboys and keep rolling, keep that perfect record perfect.
So we also had the Gordy's food drive, in which we were able to have to my knowledge, a fairly successful year. Shockingly, and for the first time in 5 years, the Stampeders have been dethroned from their title of bringing in the most food. They were dethroned by the Cowboys.
Aha. Well, that is stellar from everyone, but especially from those top two teams. Just amazing how much food and monetary donations they brought in.
Yeah, that
I won't go into the
25.
full. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Kevin.
I'm just saying that, like the $2,500 Walmart gift certificates or whatever, that was like, whoa, wow, from one team. Like that was a, I don't know, I wouldn't say weird, but it was just like, okay, I mean, it works.
Yeah, so I won't go into the full details of the team breakdowns, but we did accumulate 5,662 pounds of food, which was roughly about 6,347 items. In total, there was $1,000 and well, $1,095 raised, and then, as Kevin mentioned, the $2,500 in gift cards. I don't believe that was just from one team, but apparently it was just for Walmart. But yeah, regardless, it goes a long way for the Veterans Food Bank of Calgary. And when we were talking to them last year, they said it made up of like what they would usually collect in about 6 weeks. And of course, with it
Incredible.
being the push around Thanksgiving and leading up to Christmas and stuff, it goes a really long way for them.
It's very cool to see the CBFA, follow this initiative that Dave Hardy and the Stampeders started. Kudos to them and every one of the players and parents and teams involved in collecting all this food and donations. Congratulations to all of you. You've made a number of veterans Christmas. It's going to be a decent Christmas for a lot of them, thanks to your efforts.
Kevin, anything else you want to add on Gordy's food drive?
Not really. It's just it's always really cool to see like how much, as someone with a lot of, military, like mem you know relatives and heritage, revolving around the military, it always makes me very proud of the way everyone gets and supports our veterans. So it's a very awesome initiative, and it warms my heart every year.
Moving on from Gordy's food drive, we have had sanctions put into place. James, you and I talked about this last week in our first recording of the podcast, which did not go to air. I don't know if you want to touch on that a little bit, because it was
Well,
fully announced as of Monday.
yeah, so now it's common knowledge. We can talk about what happened. So basically what happened was one of the parents on the Lions team had registered their child with incorrect information. The player was not eligible to play due to being in grade 10 this year. And unfortunately, we've seen this in the past, so there is precedent for this, and the penalty is harsh. And even though the coach of the Lions, Coach Kirby, brought it to the league's attention as soon as it was discovered. We know that it's not the greatest situation for them. They understand it's gonna cost them, right? So basically any game that this player participated in, the Lions have been stripped of the points. So that is two of their three wins and their tie, which is why in the standings they have only 2 points now instead of the seven that they should have been at. So unfortunately, the rules are in place, and the sanctions have been placed on the team. And even though it was, most likely not something that was done on purpose to try and subvert the rules, it does negatively affect the entire team and those kids. So unfortunately for them, they're dropping in the standings. Having a look at the updated standings, the top doesn't change a whole lot. I'm sure,
We'll
Cole,
elaborate on that in
you
a
can go
minute. Yeah.
through the list, but what it means for the Lions is that instead of fighting for one of the top spots in, what might be the Division Two playoffs, they're going to be fighting for one of the bottom spots in the Division Two playoffs.
But I think the important thing to also note is, based off of how things were done previously in the league with similar situations like this, is just because the Lions were reduced or were stripped of those wins and those points in the game and that they scored, it doesn't benefit the other teams. The only benefit that the teams get is they now get the head-to-head tiebreaker if they are tied with the Lions. They're not getting a win for those games. Their standings, with the exception of their points against, stay the same.
Right.
So if you wonder it or question it, that's what's been done in the past. The CBFA has stayed on that ground and won't change anything further.
Yeah. And the rules are that harsh because, back in the early 90s, a coach, tried to do it on purpose. And yeah, so harsh rules had to be put in place. And we honestly, we don't see these infractions happen very often. They're extremely rare. And the important thing for the CBFA is that, every kid's got a place to play, and there is a place for grade 10s to play. And if the CBFA is gonna, change the rules to allow them to play in our league, it's going to mean that those other leagues aren't going to have the benefit of those players and they're going to suffer. So this is the balance.
Yep, no, and it's been like that for a while, and it will continue to be like that. And well, it may be unfortunate for the Lions, it's how the rules work. So on that note, looking at the standings after week eight, the Raiders, as we mentioned before, stay undefeated with a perfect 8-0 record. The Eagles sit in second, leading the Wildcats, both with a 6-2 record. The Eagles hold the head-to-head advantage in that tiebreaker. The Cowboys bring up fourth seed with a 5-3 record, leading the Bulldogs, as Kevin previously mentioned, who sit 4-3-1. And then a point behind the Bulldogs are the Mavericks, who come in sixth with a 4-4 record. Following that, it is the Stampeders with a 2-6 record. They lead the Colts, who sit at 1-7 on 2 points. The Lions are now sitting down in ninth with a 1-4 record on 2 points. And because of the sanctions, the Colts hold that tiebreaker and currently have the higher seed. And then in 10th place is the Rebels, who are 0-8. Should I deep dive into the playoff clinching scenarios before week nine?
I
I
think we
did. I
can
did.
talk about them as we talk about the games. Yeah.
I mean, I will
Yeah, I
say
can do
that the
that.
Bulldogs will have to pull off a bit of an upset because they face the Raiders, I believe. So.
And yeah, so let's talk about schedule this weekend because there's been a bit of a change.
Yes, there has been a change.
And the change is that Encana Field is no longer available to us because they're putting up the dome, and that meant that we had to shuffle the schedule again. So this week's schedule shuffle involves the Cowboys and Rebels moving from Encana Field at 1 o'clock, I believe, to Hellard Field at 3:15, and the originally scheduled Hellard Field 3:15 game was Bulldogs at Raiders, and that one is moving up to Ed Egger Field in Airdrie. So the Bulldogs are going to have a real tall order if they want to try and upset the undefeated Raiders on their home turf. That game goes in Airdrie at 10 a.m. Saturday morning.
So on that note, yeah, we'll start with the whole order. The Wildcats take on the Lions first thing in the morning at 8:30. Wildcats are pushing for second overall, and to do so, to get that, they need a win and an Eagles loss or tie, as the Eagles have that tiebreaker in that one. Lions are pushing for eighth overall. They need a win and a Colts loss in order to get that. As James previously mentioned, the Bulldogs are going up to Airdrie for that game at 10 o'clock. The Raiders have no playoff clinching scenarios. They have locked first overall, no matter what happens. The Bulldogs, need an upset for fourth overall. They need a win and a Cowboys loss. For fifth overall, because they are a point ahead of the Mavericks, which would secure them home field advantage for the Div 2 playoffs, they would need a win and a Cowboys win or tie, or they would need a loss and a Mavericks loss or tie. All this will be posted on social media, I believe, Wednesday morning. So if you're confused and can't follow along, there will be visual representation. Following that, we have the Colts taking on the Stampeders at 10:45 in what is going to be probably one of their most important games between both of those two teams, sitting 2 points apart towards the bottom of the standings. For the Stampeders to clinch seventh overall, they need to win. For the Colts to clinch seventh overall, they need to win. If the Colts want to stay in the Division Two playoffs, if they lose, they also need the Lions to lose their game. The Eagles will be taking on the Mavericks at 1 o'clock. The Mavericks are pushing for fifth. They need a win and a Bulldogs loss to do that, whereas the Eagles need a win or a Wildcats loss to secure second. And then our final game of the day, the Cowboys taking on the Rebels. Cowboys trying to hold on to fourth. They need a win or a Bulldogs loss or tie to do that. And there are no playoff clinching scenarios for the Rebels. They are finishing 10th, unfortunately, no matter what their game ends up like.
And a berth into the Div 3 finals.
Div 3 final and a chance to play in a provincial game.
Right.
And then we also have 9-a-side games coming up next week. We have confirmed those games. It will be the Eagles taking on Wildcats 1 at 3 o'clock on Sunday. Raiders taking on Wildcats 2 at 5 o'clock on Sunday, and the Cowboys playing the Chiefs at 7 p.m. on Sunday. Those are their last games, kind of playoff type vibes for them. With the best two records, I guess you can consider that Cowboys Chiefs one kind of like a championship game for the 9-a-side, but 9-a-side will also be wrapping up this weekend.
Yeah, we're getting down to that time of year. The leaves are turning color and falling all over, and it's getting downright chilly out there.
I had to scrape my car off this morning because I went to Walmart and that wasn't fun. That time of year. Crazy.
In
Only a few
addition
weeks. Sorry?
to our games on Saturday, we are also honoring some Hall of Fame inductees. Or I guess Wall of Fame inductees. Throughout the year, we have, or there's been a bunch of names that have been put up on the side of the CBFA trailer, as a Wall of Fame honoring people who have contributed a lot of years of service to the CBFA or have gone on to play professional ball, whether it be the CFL or the NFL. So I guess Sunday is also going to be our unofficial first or unofficial inaugural Hall of Fame game week, where I'll be honoring four individuals. So lots of extra stuff happening this week as well.
That's very cool.
So,
That's crazy that
of
we
course, the
only have
glorious photo ops.
it's crazy we only have the 3 weeks left of football and then goes by quick, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Yeah, it's that time of year and we're almost done. It's hard to believe that we're already here. It's been a good season.
It has been a good season. Yeah. Have we got anything else to chat about today?
I
Not that I can
don't
think of.
think so. Of course, we're always looking for volunteers. If you want to volunteer, check out the website. We need
We've
bodies.
got a we have a need for volunteers. Yeah, we always do. So, reach out to us there. We will put you in contact with the correct people, and they'll get you set up and introduce you around everyone on game day. It'll be great. Bring your friends.
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty much it. Yeah, 1 week of regular season left before we get into the critical playoff games. Yeah, in the meantime, I guess just go football.
The CBFA podcast is brought to you by longtime players of the game sponsor, Wolf Cadillac Calgary. Check out their selection of new and used vehicles at their new location, 756 100 First Street Southwest Calgary, or online, www.wolfcadillaccalgary.com. We would also like to thank the Canadian Brew House and the Calgary Sports and Entertainment Corporation for their sponsorship of the CBFA. Support such as theirs is essential for minor football in Alberta to continue to grow and thrive. Thank you for listening.